The asset management group Signia reported results for the 6 months to the end of March yesterday. The group's turnover rose by 10% to 230 million rand. The headline earnings rose 25% to 32 cents a share. The dividend was kept unchanged at 25 cents a share, while the assets under management rose by 26% to 228 billion rand. On the line is Magda Wozicka. She's the CEO of Signia. Magda, welcome to the show. You state in the results announcement that it was a very challenging period, but a 25% HEPS growth and 26% increase in funds under management seem to be very solid, especially if you compare it to Coronation, who recently reported a drop in assets under management and a 26% decline in headline earnings.
Indeed, Jack. Thanks, sir, for having me on the show. Look, we're very happy with the results. I think it has been a very challenging environment. So, you know, if you think about the last quarter of last year where the market dropped both in South Africa and internationally by 20%, there was, you know, a sharp recovery in the first quarter in various sectors. So we are traveling through, you know, fairly troubled investment waters. But I think, you know, we've got a few things that work for us. One is we are a low-cost asset manager. So in the spirit of volatility, when investors are super cautious about costs, about fees, about transparency, that completely plays to our marketing proposition, which is the lowest cost savings and investment product in South Africa. And then, you know, we've been very fortunate to deliver very good returns to our investors. So it's kind of top investment performance across all of our products, unit trust, institutional market. And that has attracted, you know, quite a lot of inflows. And there are some very pleasing numbers. So, for instance, the number of retail investors using our platforms has doubled to 16,000 people. Number of members in our umbrella fund has doubled to 30,000 people. In fact, you know, in our world, we've had a fairly good period. But we're living through such uncertain times that I'm very cautious to sing, you know, our own praises from the rooftops.
You also state in the notes to the results announcement that regulations are becoming very onerous and that the regulating body for the financial services industry, the FSCA, encourages consolidation. How does that affect the industry?
You know, Erica, that's a massive trend. So a national treasury has basically, an FSCA, a couple of years ago, announced that, you know, from a regulatory perspective, they want to reduce the number of standalone retirement funds to 200. And at the moment, you have roughly 1,600 of those funds. You know, if you look back 10 years ago, there were 15,000 registered retirement funds. So what's happening in the institutional side of the market, retirement funds side of the market, is that a lot of corporates are abandoning the concept of running their own retirement fund and are collapsing their retirement fund into these super funds, you know, these umbrella funds. And obviously these umbrella funds then aim to be kind of a one-stop shop solution. So they provide the investments, they provide the death and disability benefits, they provide the post-retirement product kind of plugged into the umbrella fund. And, you know, the large insurers are the big players in the space. And they've recognized in the last, say, 5 years that this is their opportunity to reclaim the assets back from the boutique asset managers. So the boutique asset managers, as much as they're huge and no longer boutique, but nonetheless, it's your Coronations, your Allan Grays, your Investec. And suddenly you have Sanlam and Liberty and Momentum and Old Mutual effectively sucking in assets away from the standalone asset managers. And that is a massive, massive trend that I think many people are underappreciating, particularly asset managers, active asset managers. You know, we launched our umbrella fund about 4 years ago, and it has grown just under 6 billion in size now. And my biggest regret is that I didn't launch our umbrella fund, you know, 10 years ago, that I only recognized the trend 4 years ago. I should have been quicker out of the starting block. But nonetheless, we've got one, you know, despite the fact that it's only 6 billion in size, it's already sixth or seventh largest umbrella fund in South Africa. So I see that consolidation as posing a huge threat to standalone asset managers and a big opportunity for life insurers.
How does this impact on investors?
A couple of things. One is be vigilant. you know, I would be very vigilant about becoming a member of the fund where you don't have the option to select what you can invest in, where you are kind of automatically pushed into a particular investment solution. One of the initiatives of the regulators, in addition to driving the consolidation, and they do it through a whole lot of mechanisms, mostly regulation around boards of trustees and making it very difficult to run a standalone fund. But one of the pieces of regulation that has come out is complete fee disclosure. Because as much as you can drive all these assets into the hands of these umbrella funds, mostly run by and sponsored by life insurance companies, it's no good having these super funds if they are overcharging. So there's a piece of regulation which became effective on the 1st of March, which forces all umbrella funds and all asset managers to disclose all tiers of fees and costs inherent in their product offering. And I know that people are going to cap down, like, you know, cats on a hot tin roof around that disclosure. But as a member of a retirement fund, you should become, at least be acutely aware, and ensure that your employer provides you with information relating to what is available to you within your retirement fund, you know, within that umbrella that you now are being obliged to contribute to. What are your investment options? What are the costs inherent in those investment options? Most of those umbrella funds obviously push their own asset management product ahead of anybody else, but on the side, they do make other portfolios, cheaper portfolios, available. So vigilance. I think people will have to start becoming, you know, if the employer isn't going to look after your best interests any longer in the retirement fund space, then you as a member, you know, and given that that is your biggest pot of savings outside of your house, then you as a member need to become more informed yourself about what is happening to your retirement fund money.
Not too many people are doing that. Just lastly, you have been very vocal about state capture and corporate governance, both in the public and private sector. What do you make of the revelations at the inquiry into developments at the PIC?
Well, I've been following them with, you know, huge amount of interest. You know, I have listened to absolutely every session that has played out, you know, and has been streamed online. What we are seeing at the PIC, I mean, you know, if you take a little bit of a step back, you know, PIC manages money on behalf of the government employees pension fund. It is as close to a sovereign wealth fund as South Africa ever comes. You know, it's 2 trillion in assets. It's the largest pot of money in this country. It has always attracted shady characters who wanted to benefit from that pot. And I'm not talking about right now. I'm talking about, you know, when National Party was in power. And there were always deals within deals being struck. Certainly, the level of absolutely scandalous transactions that the PIC has, or executives, let's be very clear, executives of the PIC have embarked upon in order to self-enrich themselves. In the past, let's assume since Brian Molefe was CEO, because I think all of this really started, you know, the grand scale heist started under his leadership when Dr. Dan Majiba, sorry, I struggle to give them any doctor credit, was the chief investment officer of that fund, and then he became the CEO. And what is so clear is that literally every single transaction that the PIC entered into, so not buying listed shares necessarily, although there's some dirt in that as well, but almost every transaction or under their watch has been tainted by some form of corruption, some kind of referral fees, middlemen. And what is so troubling about it is not only the individuals involved, because I think, you know, the NPA will catch up with them. The amount of value destruction in that fund, the fact that the funding levels of that fund have gone down, and I have seen the numbers. I don't think they are in the public domain, but the deterioration of funding of that fund has deteriorated at a very, very, you know, worrying rate. And that becomes a burden on the taxpayers of South Africa. If that fund cannot meet its pension obligation to your, you know, medical doctors, your nurses, your municipal workers, your police force, then the taxpayer has to step in. So it's the individuals there. But what I find more troubling around, you know, all these transactions being described in graphic detail at the PIC Commission of Inquiry is the number of, you know, sponsors, legal advisors, auditors, all this entire financial ecosystem which surrounded these transactions, where people, you know, were not committing the fraud, but they were certainly looking the other way. And you really have to question the role of the entire financial services ecosystem, all these people, and the fact that they enabled this to happen, that no one blew the whistle, that they took their fees and looked the other way. And I think that goes to the integrity of many professions in South Africa. And many professions should be looking at themselves right now and saying, what is going wrong in the system? Where are the checks and balances? What do we need to do to improve this environment?
What would you do if you were a member of that government employee pension fund?
I would hold the Board of Trustees of the Government Employees Pension Fund accountable. Above the PIC, which is the asset manager where all this corruption happened, sits a Board of Trustees of the fund itself. I would want to know, who are those people? What are their responsibilities? What on earth are they doing in terms of paying attention? You know, they are obliged to, by an act of law, to outsource the management of that fund to the PIC. But having said that, that does not indemnify them from being accountable for the performance of that fund, for being accountable to what happens to that 2 trillion rand. And to me, the weakest structure in this is that Board of Trustees. And I think that they should be held to account. I don't think they've done their job, each and every one of them. I really think that the ultimate judiciary responsibility for ensuring that that fund is well managed, that the risk management processes are in place. If there are people sitting around the table who, again, through omission, enabled the theft to happen. And I'm just absolutely appalled, is the verbiage I would use.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you, Magda. That was Magda Vozitska. She's the CEO of Signia.